From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour, starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Namdi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst and contributing writer for Washington City Paper. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Also joining us today, our guest is Mark Elrich, the county executive for Montgomery County. Mark Elrich, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure. How are you doing?
Before we get to Montgomery County, Tom Sherwood, I certainly was surprised by the Washington Post by Marissa Lang, in which they talked about the fact that the D.C. National Guard officer on the ground on the day of the demonstrations at Lafayette Square was the senior most D.C. National Guard officer and served as liaison between the National Guard and the U.S. Park Police. But talk about exactly what he revealed about what federal officials were looking for.
Kojo, this was nothing but a planned military assault on American citizens. If you thought the federal officers overreacted at Lafayette Square last June, it could have been so far worse. It could have been a battlefield. National Guard Major Adam DeMarco told Congress that the Trump administration had collected ammunition, something called a heat ray that would both do sound and burn skin. They had assault rifles prepared. Some critics are saying this is exactly what President Trump has said he wants to do, have some major confrontation on the streets of America to help him get reelected. But if this major, Adam DeMarco's reporting to Congress is true, it just makes unnerves me how close we came to a true military assault right here in the nation's capital.
He said they were searching for crowd control technology deemed too unpredictable to use in war zones. Did you see this report, Mark Elrich? Were you surprised by it?
I saw the report, but nothing Trump does surprises me. I mean, we have reached the point where the lunacy knows no bounds. So I thought, yeah, that makes sense. He would do this. It's shocking.
Yeah. And we have to say the Attorney General, William Barr, has not said anything against this. He has, in fact, many people are concerned that he is helping the president maybe set the situation where this could happen. So it's not just the president. It's also his administration, including the Attorney General of the United States.
As I said, our guest is Mark Elrich, County Executive of Montgomery County. Mark Elrich, Governor Larry Hogan moved the state into phase three at the beginning of the month, but you kept Montgomery County in phase two. What is the timeline for moving the county into phase three of reopening? What metrics need to be hit?
Well, first place, we don't work on a timeline. This is about public health, and you know the time is right when the time arrives. And we have never said that we're trying to set dates and we're going to do this by this date or this by that date, because if the metrics, if the cases are too prevalent in the community, we're not going there. And, you know, we made a decision, you know, when this all started early on, when the infections exploded in the D.C. area, you know, we were contributing, us in Prince George's County, over half the cases in the state. That, by and large, is not true anymore. We have been able to, you know, get our rates lower than most counties except the small counties. And, you know, we attribute that to a more cautious approach to opening. This is about public safety. So, you know, you ask about metrics. You know, this is new, and it's new to the health officers and everybody. We've never dealt with anything like this. So, you know, we started out, came up with some metrics, but, you know, the truth is that, you know, the metrics, which I probably measured too much, and there are some things that are really, really key. And, you know, what we're, you know, looking at, probably the most important metrics out there are your test positivity rate, what percentage of your tests are coming back positive, the number of cases per 100,000. And there's new CDC guidance out now that would have the county at a not where we need to be. On the, let's see which one this is. We would be at moderate risk in one category, and we'd be at a higher risk of transmission in another category in terms of how many cases per 100,000 we have. That, so when you ask like what a metric or what a place looks like that you'd want to be like, we're looking at the work done by the COVID Act Now org, which is a joint effort of Georgetown, Stanford, and Harvard. And can, you know, when the governor opened, when he opened three, he talked about Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey. Connecticut has 5.2 cases per 100,000 daily. New Jersey has 4.5. New York has 3.8. Maryland has 10.2. So Tom, if Sherwood? That's your model, we ain't there yet.
Tom Sherwood?
Yes, and unfortunately, we have to worry about what the CDC says now because there's been political influence there. But let me talk about another battlefield. The public health director for Montgomery County, Dr. Travis Gales, has been leading the county's fight on what you can yes. do and not do based on the science. He had a fight with the governor over closing private schools. The governor overrode him. But in the process of this, he told Bethesda Beat that he has been receiving both racist and homophobic threats. It's made him worry about himself, his family. I know the council, and you have just put out a letter. What did your letter say about this?
That this isn't what we do in Montgomery County, and behavior like that is completely unacceptable. And people who are working, you know, he's not a partisan, he's not a politician, he's a health officer. And if people don't have the decency to respect, you know, a health officer who's doing his job to try to make sure that the people who are screaming are safe, that is just totally inappropriate behavior. I've seen some of Travis's stuff. He shared it, with us occasionally. It is just ugly, and it's coming from people, and you get the pleasure of Googling people to figure out who's writing this stuff. It's not like these are any people who are in any position to judge anything related to health. Because they actually possess absolutely no expertise other than this kind of blind allegiance to Trump. And I'll just say the thing that amazes me, even after the President of the United States admits lying to everybody, people choose to believe the lies, even after he's even said he lied. That's the most amazing thing in the world to me. But it inflames these people, and, it's turned them against people who are their public servants. And it's very disturbing.
What kind of responses, vulgar or otherwise, have you been getting as the leader during this terrible time?
I get the same kind of hate mail, but obviously there's no race or homophobia in this one. It's this is some kind of communist plot. I'm like, what kind of communist plot would this be? You're trying to kill businesses, and my feeling is, for the kind of agenda we have in Montgomery County, we actually need businesses to be open. This is the worst thing that we have to do. We have to do it for health reasons, but I have no desire to kill business. So we wish we weren't here. And in fact, if people had been more aggressive on day one, or at least day 14, we wouldn't be where we are today, but we are where we are. But I get a constant barrage of that, and I'm an idiot, and I was a school teacher. There's an insult for you. You were just a school teacher. It's like, wow. And it's the same thing. I look up people sometimes and I Google them to see who they are, and it's just fascinating. Often Trump supporters, often supporters of other off the rail stuff. It's but it's disturbing, because some of it's, implied threats. It's kind of like, we got this stuff over immigration stuff, and I'd have people, attacking my family and saying horrible things they wish would happen to my grandchildren and things. It's disgusting.
Well, you were not informed by Governor Hogan, you and other local officials, that he was moving to phase three. You were essentially blindsided by that. And there's been tension between the county and you, between you and Governor Hogan on this and other issues like schools reopening in person. What is now your relationship with the governor? Are you talking with him at all?
Well, first place, I want to be clear. It is not just me. You know, all you see in the Washington Post, such as they cover anything in the local world, is, you know, more Montgomery and Prince George's County focus. But Angela's been at it with the governor. Stuart Pittman's been at it with the governor. Johnny O's been at it. Jack Young's been at it. I mean, basically, the Democratic County executives in the I-95 corridor, you know, from Baltimore County down to D.C. and then up to Frederick, we have all been in the same situation. Not consulted. We have written them letters saying, you know, you need to consult with us. We would like to know. All we get before a press conference is, there's going to be a press conference tomorrow at 5 o'clock, or there's going to be a press conference at 3 o'clock. We get no details. They don't even ask us. They don't include our health officers in their discussions about what they're going to do that relates to health, which I find a bit bizarre since, you know, I wouldn't be making decisions for the county if I weren't talking to somebody who was an expert in the field.
We only got about a minute left in this segment.
Interested. So, you know, we've got a we've got that as an issue, but I will say this. I've been able to work with his staff in housing, on economic development, on transportation, and they continue to work with us like complete professionals. So whatever differences the governor and I have, it does not translate into an inability to work with his administration and my administration, which is a good thing.
We're talking.
And I give him credit for that.
We're talking with Mark Eldridge. He is the county executive for Montgomery County. If you have called, stay on the line. I'm Kojo Nam.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picoult and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. Our guest is Mark Eldridge. He's the county executive for Montgomery County. Tom Sherwood, it would appear that in Arlington, there was a controversial sidewalk social distancing ordinance that said that in certain busy areas, more than four people could not, groups of four or more should be broken up by police. They have decided to withdraw that ordinance. Why?
Well, how do you enforce it? This is kind of an example when people say we ought to stop people from doing this if they or fine people if they're not wearing masks. In Arlington, there are crowds in Clarendon area, nightclubs and bars and restaurants were crowding on the sidewalks, not keeping social distance. So the board voted to impose a fine of $100, but the police and the public health officials and others said it's just impossible to enforce. So this week they voted to rescind it. And still hope that the businesses that are, in fact, partially open will do a better job of managing their customers.
Next issue I wanted to get to with County Executive Eldridge, but I will let Paul in Silver Spring, Maryland, take us there. Paul, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mr. Kovno. How are you doing today?
I'm well.
Hello, Mark. This is Paul.
Hello. Humphrey. Hey, how you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well. My question for you has to do with there's a situation over in Bethesda where there has been a developer digging up a cemetery. In fact, the discussion was on Kojo's show just last week. And from my understanding, there was a letter written to you because you had made the statement that if we could show...
Paul, allow me to interrupt. You led our call screener to believe that you had a question about the Purple Line. That's where I was going to go next. I was also going to go to Moses Cemetery because there are at least three other callers who are on the line who want to talk about Moses Cemetery. So I'm going to put you back on hold, and then when we get to Moses Cemetery, I'll bring you back on. In the meantime, Mark Eldridge, the contractors overseeing construction of the Purple Line, sued the state this week for breach of contract. They're seeking more than $100 million from the state. A new public accusation in the firm's lawsuit is their assertion that Maryland officials required them to mask some delays in monthly project schedules in late 2016 and early 2017. What are your thoughts, and where do you think this is all going?
I don't think it's going well. And I believe it's probably quite possibly true. And I would imagine that at some point they'll be able to produce some document that shows that. It's all very disturbing. This has not gone as planned. They ignored a lot of people's advice. I was never a fan of the P3 concept on this project. And I've always been worried about the state getting stuck holding the bag. And here we are holding the bag. And it says a lot about, you know, when they're talking about doing now an $11 billion P3. It's like, really? Because you handled this one so well, we should go do another one? It's a real problem. The state did not do the work it should have done. I don't know if they should have started even doing a contract with somebody until they had cleared the lawsuits. Because, you know, once you tell somebody to proceed in the midst of a lawsuit and then a judge says, well, you can't, that was a foreseeable possibility that put us at risk. And when you look at some of the problems they've run into, WSSC pipes in Prince George's County, Metro's requirement for a crash wall, which I do frankly find a little bit absurd on my part because they don't have a crash wall between the Metro rail and the train tracks. But that aside, yeah. I mean, these are things they missed and didn't take account for, which are driving up the cost of the project. And again, they had years. I mean, God knows how long this thing was under study.
Tom Sherwood?
Just for people who are not bureaucrats, when he refers to P3, he's talking about public-private partnerships. You know, Governor Eldridge, ran for governor. He was opposed to the Purple Line. He reluctantly approved it, but first he gutted state funding for it. He forced Montgomery and Prince George's to pay more for it. He has never been a fan of it. And now he's, as you just mentioned, he wants to do this I-495, I-270 reworking for traffic. It seems to me that he'll be leaving office in 2022 saying how he proposed all these great things and none of them will be done. What political price, if any, should Governor Hogan play for his, some say, botching of these transportation projects?
Well, I mean, he's going to run in the Republican primary and he's going to talk about, you know, what he tried to do.
Running for president.
Right. So, you know, you'll wind up in a primary and I'm sure, you know, his opponents will say, let's talk about those projects. Where are they today? You know, how did that work out with you? I mean, if he has to pay another $800 million on the Purple Line, you know, you're talking about a 25% increase in the project on top of all the other increases in the project. If I were him, I would recalibrate and think about what kind of things can we do. And, you know, there are things they could do that would be helpful. They've got to figure a way out of this problem.
Excuse me. His administration, the transportation officials, are telling the council this week and everyone else that this Purple Line project will go forward, although details aren't clear. But has the governor said anything? I don't think he said anything publicly, as he's been busy all over the state, but not on the Purple Line.
Yeah,
I don't even know if he's ever visited the Purple Line.
I can't say for sure, but I would guess he has. I just think that, you know, that his officials will say what they're told they have to say. I mean, that's really what happens in the world. That's always the case. You work for somebody, you talk about what they said they're going to do. But he has no plan. And they have a fundamental decision to make as to whether they're going to look for new partners or whether they're going to take on management of the project itself. Are they going to look for somebody else to finance it, or are they going to take a chance? Are they going to finance it?
Is there any chance that the current private partnership, which is threatening to leave and talking about how they'll scale down in the next month, is there any chance that they could be persuaded to stay if the governor steps up?
I think if the governor paid them what they want, they'd probably stay. But it doesn't mean there won't be more to come. I mean, we are not out of this project yet. So I don't see where they're going to stay. He can't afford it. I don't think the state can afford this. It would rob every other transportation project in the state even deeper. I'm not sure the state legislature would stand for that. There are other people who want things in the state, and you know, they're already emptying out their coffers.
If you drive along,
I can't picture the company taking a hit.
if you drive along the 16-mile route, I've done some of it, it is a real mess, and I get the feeling that it may never get built.
Oh, I think something will get built. I'm not that pessimistic. I'm just not sure whether it'll be exactly this, and I sure don't know when.
Okay. Here's Zoe in Bakersfield, Maryland. Zoe, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Or is it Zoe?
Hi, Zoe. Mark, hello. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Hey.
So, Moses Cemetery, what do you plan to do to stop the desecration, and why haven't you upheld your promise to protect it?
Because it's not Moses Cemetery. Moses Cemetery is on lots 175 and 177. It was bought by White's Tabernacle in about 1911 or 1912. They moved the cemetery from D.C. onto that site. That is the site that is being protected. I was in meetings. I have supported the church in their efforts with park and planning. I think that, you know, they got a very raw deal and have not been treated really well in this process. But this is not Moses Cemetery. And you could look at the letters from the White Tabernacle Moses Cemetery group that is has both descendants buried there and is still in existence. They still have a cemetery on Falls Road. And they've written a pretty scathing letter saying that the assertions aren't true. And they're part of the original Moses Cemetery group. So they are very upset about the way this has gone. I don't think Park and Planning handled it well. I thought that the Park and Planning should have allowed them to have somebody on site to not oversee, but to witness what was being done. And I wrote letters suggesting that. I've said I thought Dr. Blakey should have been allowed on site. He should have been allowed to watch the process of excavation. It took me weeks before they agreed even to have a meeting. I went to the owner to ask him to do more because I had no other avenues to go through. I have no authority whatsoever, zero authority, nor does the state. So there's a letter from the state where they express some concern, but the state also says apparently that they're satisfied with what's being done. I was out at the site again yesterday to see what they had done and, what they had turned up. They seem to be doing the whole site under the restrictions that were opposed originally on only a small corner of the site in terms of how they're doing the excavation. They're not finding any bodies.
Well,
they're deep enough that you would have found them.
Well, we did an entire segment on this issue. One of our guests was Marsha Coleman Adebayo, and there's a Marsha in Bethesda on the phone. I don't know if it is the same. Marsha, your turn.
Oh, hi, Mark. This is Marsha Adebayo. Can you hear me?
I do, yeah.
Mark, I'm just so disappointed in you. You must know that letter...
You only got about 2 minutes left in this segment, Marsha.
Okay, but you must know that the letter you just referred to was written by the PR firm, by the construction company, that it was a funded letter. I mean, you must get enough of those to be able to know that. So the question is, you wrote to a constituent and you said... that if we could prove noncompliance, that you would halt construction. We sent you pictures of tombstones, of coffin lids, of pieces of clothing that would have been used in coffins. We never received a reply from you, Mark. When are you going to reply to our letter and those pictures? And when are you going to halt construction?
Mark Elrich?
Yep.
Got about a minute left.
The state's attorney went back out on the site for the second time and sent people there, and they could find none of the things that you're talking about. There was a house on the site. There is a trash pit on the site that has bottles and apparently had other things from the house. The rocks that came out of the ground, I was skeptical, like, whether you could have rocks that looked like that. They actually have a lot of rocks that have straight sides and have flat backs and flat faces. It is actually true that the rock there will shear on a straight line, which I would not have believed if I didn't see this myself, because I didn't know if it was that kind of rock. There's just no proof of anything, Marsha. It's not there. And if people had agreed to work like what I tried to
just
do.
Just got 20 seconds.
I tried to put you together with the owner. I tried to get an agreement to let Dr. Blakey go out there so we could witness that. And you didn't respond to that. And if we had responded, the owner was willing to actually let people go out there. And I'm afraid that was open to Blakey.
That's all the time we have in this segment. Marcia, thank you for your call. We're going to take a short break. I'm Kojo Nandi. Welcome back. Our guest is Montgomery County Executive Mark Ehrlich, and we're taking your calls at 800-433-8850. Better call now. We won't have a great deal of time left in this segment. Mark Ehrlich, the November 3rd election is just around the corner. How is the county preparing, and what can county residents expect in terms of mail-in ballots and in-person voting centers?
We've got more than 40 in-person voting centers that will be up. There may be some changes when some centers wind up getting used for different purposes, but the centers, we're going to have lots of those. We're going to have boxes for people to deposit their ballots if they don't want to. If they ask for a ballot by mail, they can either mail it back or they can bring it to a drop-in box. The drop-in boxes are, again, if you go to the county page, it'll take you to a place where you can see all the locations of drop-in boxes, all the locations of voting. But what we're really encouraging people to do is vote by mail, because we don't want to bring lots of people into small rooms where they vote.
Tom Sherwood?
I want to get to the ballot measures on the ballot.
Yeah.
But first, I need to ask you about your chief administrative officer, Andrew Klein, had to resign controversies over his book and his relationship with private businesses. You immediately appointed Richard Madalino, a veteran state legislator and your budget director, to be the new county administrative officer. Mr. Madalino said it was time he would try to, quote, reset the button on your relationship with the council over housing and budget issues. Has he reset it? And when does the council vote up or down on his appointment?
I thought they just did.
I may have missed it this week if they did.
Yeah, I could be unconscious because I got so much else going on. But Rich has got a good relationship with people. He's known people a long time. He's more hands-on in these things, which I think is good. He's very much in tune with what I want to do. So I think he will be an effective person working with the council.
I haven't heard the council members complaining much about him yet, so that's a good sign. But let me get to the ballot again. There are ballot initiatives that would radically change how the council is composed, make it a 9-member council, all local wards, not any at large. There's also a proposal to limit property taxes in the county only to inflation and get rid of the loophole that if all the council members vote for a tax increase, they can do it. Where are you on these ballot initiatives, these two particularly?
I like the compromise position that the council took to have add 2 more seats to the district,
two more districts,
and keep the four at large, but go to 7 district seats. Because I thought for a long time that the districts in the county have gotten too big. There were over 200,000 people in a district, and it's just very hard to represent those many people and stay in touch. And I know how hard a district council member's job can be. They just got too big. I would have probably gone with a larger number of districts and still had some at large. I wasn't in favor of getting rid of all the at-large, because I think at-large brings some council members who have to take the perspective of a broader view in mind and not just beholding to one group. So I like the council's compromise.
Okay, on county property taxes, former county executive Ike Leggett and business leaders came out this week and said they do not want a stark limitation on what property taxes can be raised. What's your view on that?
So again, I'm supporting the legislation that opposes FICR. I'm supporting A. I am not supporting be. The county is in, you know, real trouble. We have the worst tax structure of any jurisdiction in the region. It is probably worse than Prince George's County's trim amendment, which is difficult to be. And it has constrained our ability to raise money. I'm limited right now to last year's revenues times the inflation rate. And so this year, we could easily have a decline in property tax revenues because people with vacant buildings will go in and appeal assessments and get lower assessments, generate less revenues, and inflation is going to be close to zero. And a regulation tying revenues to inflation might have been fine back in the days of 4 or 5% inflation, but it does not function now. I mean, the cost of, you know, road construction, the cost of healthcare, the whole bunch of, you know, just construction in general. Lots of things in county government do not go up at the inflation rate. And to limit it to only inflation is really, really harmful. But it also means you can't address any problems that we have on an ongoing basis. So if we want to make more investment in the social sphere to deal with some of these long-term racial inequities in the county, that doesn't happen without funding to make it possible. We look at the Virginia counties, which have a much more robust tax system, where the private sector has been willing to pay additional taxes to provide and finance transportation construction. I couldn't do that in Montgomery County. I cannot fund bonds for basic construction projects.
If I have time, I'd like to also ask you, your good friend on the council, Hans Reimer, was saying that the county's got to address the housing moratorium, that it is stifling development that would bring in new money and new development, new jobs and new tax revenue for the county, but the housing moratoriums in the county are stifling development.
That's funny. He's sponsoring legislation that would wipe out tax revenue from all development on metro sites and trying to drive housing construction on top of metro sites where they would not pay property taxes for 10 to 15 years, which is one reason that I'm opposing that, because I can't afford to be giving up revenue. And that number of housing units that he's projected is almost the entirety of what people have said are going to be the market rate units going to be built in Montgomery County over the next 10 years. So if he's worried about revenue, he's supporting a bunch of stuff which is going to rob us of revenue. This stuff doesn't produce any new housing. It doesn't alter the projections for the number of units that are coming here. It just takes away the resources that we would normally get from housing, and that is not a good thing.
Okay. Here is Lee in Rockville, Maryland. Lee, your turn.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon, Kojo. Enjoying the show. I'd like to ask Mr. Elrich about racism in Montgomery County. I've lived in Montgomery County for 30 years, 30 years, 20 in Glenmont and 10 in Grosvenor. And in those 30 years, I've observed exactly zero racist comments, incidents of any kind. There seems to be this notion. I mean, the county council keeps on passing resolution after resolution after resolution, condemning racism, you know, doing everything to study racism. This is not George Wallace in the early 60s standing out the courthouse door. Montgomery County is a very, very good place to live. That's why a million people live here, and of all races, of all religions, of all kinds, and So I fail to see any, any reason for this pervasive notion that we're surrounded by racists.
Well, you should know, caller, that Councilmember Will Gironda sponsored a bill declaring systemic racism a public health emergency, and he wants the county to address it across all departments and agencies. What is your view, Mr. County Executive, about the existence? You mentioned racial inequities earlier, but the existence of racism, because our caller seems to think that racism only means people who have openly racist attitudes.
Well, or in this world are foolish enough to say things out loud.
We only have about a minute left, but go ahead, please.
Yeah, foolish enough to say things out loud that they probably ought not to say out loud. I don't know. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I've been in meetings with PTAs where parents got up and talked about their daughter in one of the W schools going into a class and being asked by the teacher, "What are you doing here?"
Yeah.
Something that got asked to no other student. Nobody in that class gets asked that. I can talk about, you know, things that go on with the police. I guarantee you when, you know, we've had this long discussion about when body cameras come on and what's a conversation with the resident. And, you know, what I said to the department then was, when you park your car because you see two black kids walking down the street and you walk across the street and say, "Where are you going?" Your camera comes on because that is not a conversation. And they were trying to argue, well, they were just having a conversation back then.
Okay. And I'm afraid
it is a real problem.
That's about all the time we have. Mark Ehrlich, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Mark Ehrlich is the county executive for Montgomery County. Tom Sherwood, briefly, Florence Pendleton passed this week. You knew Florence Pendleton. Tell our listeners exactly who Florence Pendleton was.
She was old school Washington, 40 years in education, a school principal. She was first elected as the first statehood senator in 1990. Unfortunately, she was also elected along with Jesse Jackson, whose national star kind of put her in the shadows. So she didn't get a lot of attention, but she spent her life trying to make the District of Columbia better.
And she passed at 94 years old.
Right in Columbus, Georgia, which is my home state.
And that's where she was born, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
She moved here to Washington, went to Howard University.
Graduate.
Lived most of the rest of her life here.
A delightful person.
Indeed. The Politics Hour was produced by Sidney Grannan. Coming up Monday, NPR's Rebecca Hersher joins us to discuss the climate crisis and what's at stake if we fail to curb greenhouse gas emissions. Plus, Kojo for Kids welcomes National Aquarium CEO John Racanelli to talk about puffins, dolphins, and sharks. Oh, my. And if you're a kid, parent, or teacher, you can nominate your class to be our virtual partner for an upcoming Kojo for Kids episode. Each week, we'll reserve time for a special group of students. Why not your class? We're taking nominations at kojoshow.org/kids. Until Monday, have a wonderful weekend. Any big plans, Tom Sherwood?
Well, let me just say happy Rosh Hashanah. At 5 o'clock, watch for the big blast of the shofar horns that'll be blowing all over the region.
Well, thank you all for listening and stay safe. I'm Kojo Nandi.
The Kojo Nandi Show is produced by Richard Cunningham, Julie Devenbrock, Kurt Gardiner, Sidney Grannan, Lauren Marco, and Inez Renegade. Our managing producer is Ingelisa Schrobsdorf. Our engineer is Natalie Yerv-Livker. Our broadcast engineer is Rashad Young. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Nnamdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.